Dit is Jeroen Tjepkema met het NOS Journaal. De Chinese president Xi Jinping heeft een verlaging van importtarieven voor buitenlandse bedrijven aangekondigd. Dat deed hij bij de opening van een grote importbeurs in Shanghai. China wil met de beurs laten zien dat het zijn binnenlandse markt wel degelijk openstelt voor buitenlandse bedrijven. Veel landen verwijten Xi dat hij dat niet doet. Het was de voornaamste reden van de Amerikaanse president Trump om de handelsoorlog te beginnen. Die oorlog heeft de sfeer tussen beide landen behoorlijk verpest en Amerikaanse bedrijven laten het massaal afweten op de beurs. Ook bedrijven uit andere landen zeggen eerst zien dan geloven. Bij Vrouwenpolder in Zeeland is vanochtend vroeg een baggerschip tegen de Oosterscheldekering gevaren. Het schip kon zelfstandig loskomen van de pijler en is naar de dichtstbijzijnde haven op Neeltje Jans gevaren voor een inspectie. Vanwege de aanvaring was de weg over de Oosterscheldekering een tijd afgesloten voor het verkeer, maar die is nu weer open. In Barneveld is in 2015 en 2016 bij de bouw van twee woonwijken vervuilde grond gebruikt, dat meldt Zembla. Het tv-programma baseert zich op een onderzoeksrapport van de Gelderse Omgevingsdienst. Doordat een afvalbedrijf de grond onvoldoende had schoongemaakt, zouden er giftige stoffen in de grond zijn achtergebleven. Het is niet duidelijk hoe schadelijk de vervuiling is voor de gezondheid. Volgens Zembla heeft de provincie Gelderland nog niets gedaan met de bevindingen van de Omgevingsdienst. Nederland krijgt vanaf volgend jaar gele geldautomaten zonder banknaam. Rabobank, ABN AMRO en ING gaan samenwerken en hun eigen automaten vervangen. Er wordt in Nederland steeds minder met contant geld betaald. Het aantal geldautomaten zal daarom gaan dalen. Met hoeveel kunnen de banken nog niet zeggen. Het aantal geldautomaten neemt al jarenlang af. In 2017 waren er ruim 1000 minder dan 5 jaar eerder. Het weer in het noorden kan het nog even duren voordat de bewolking plaatsmaakt voor wat zon. In het zuiden schijnt de zon waarschijnlijk de hele dag. Het wordt 11 tot 15 graden. Morgen ook droog en nog een paar graden warmer. Dit was het NOS Journaal.
Bent u 66PLUS en wilt u graag nieuwe mensen leren kennen? Of wilt u meedoen aan leuke activiteiten, alleen of samen met anderen? Kom dan naar de Seniorenochtend op een van onze OBA-vestigingen. Hier kunt u genieten van het samen zijn, lezingen, uitstapjes, workshops en nog veel meer. Kom langs en doe ook mee. U vindt ons in Oba Molenwijk, Buitenveldert, Mercatorplein, Reigersbos, Spaarndammerbuurt en De Bannen. Toegang is gratis. Oba, om bij te blijven.
This is somebody that most of the has an entrance.
As an entrance to
through our family, our okay. Family, our relationship.
Okay.
So and that's why it's difficult for them to recognize that. And then we go on that when this person recognizes that, listen, I've been abused through this person. Mm-hmm. We have to define what kind of abuse we're talking about. You have all kinds of abusing. You have, like you mentioned, but there's one also that's a spiritual abuse.
Mm-hmm.
And spirit abuse is, I think, that's something, I don't know if there are people who are not saved looking at this program, but I think most of the audience are, you know, those who are looking.
Yeah. Are Christians. Well, most probably Christians, yes, most likely.
Because one of the things that the spiritual abuse is mostly used mm-hmm. by Christians and using the scripture.
Yeah. No, you know what? I want us not to go there because I don't want us to lose a possible viewer who is not a Christian but wants to know how to deal with this issue of abuse and hurts, you know, coming from people who they love. Yeah. Can you just hold it there? Let me see what Pastor Anderson has to add to this point.
If I understood your question right,
yeah.
You see, there's a story about 2 weeks ago I heard in Germany, I heard that somebody murdered the wife because of this relationship. I don't know what was the cause, but that's what I heard. Mm. You see, so when somebody's being abused in a relationship, I agree with what Pastor Geoffrey said, that immediately the person has to seek help or run to somebody.
Yeah.
Otherwise, if you keep it, some people will keep on hurting you.
The thing is that, mm-hmm. you see, people have the idea that their relationship is a private matter.
Yeah.
And so for them to take a private issue out, people hesitate a lot. You know, and I think that is where maybe things begin to go wrong. But so it would be nice for us to make clear
yeah.
and to let people know at what point people must actually think of taking steps to let this thing be known. Because for all you know, somebody says, well, I mean, my wife and I, or my husband and I, are having our own fight. After all, we'll fight and settle. Mm-hmm. You see? But the thing becomes what? A cycle, a continuous.
Yeah.
So at what point must the person decide on taking a step? Because it's very important to make clear.
Yeah. I think it depends upon the individual who is being abused.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you must know your partner, and you must know the limit whereby the person can go.
Yeah.
Sometimes if you overlook matters, like, oh, he will change.
Yeah.
There's going to be a time that the enemy will take hold of your partner, and then the unexpected can happen.
Okay. Okay. I think now this brings us to a very important point. Maybe we should switch now to begin to talk about the signs.
Yeah.
The signs of abuse, the signs, those things which create abuse, which gives us the idea that there's an abuse going on, and the point at which somebody must begin to think of taking precaution. Because really, this issue of, it's my husband, it's my wife, okay, we'll settle it together, it keeps many people, let's say, within a confines of they don't know when to react and when not to.
But one day you hear the bad story.
Yeah, exactly. So we got to really make this very clear, you know. Gentlemen, Pastor Eddie.
I think, you know, I saw, I'm a counselor, and I see many. That's why my view concerning this is very broad. But I'll keep it to something that you just mentioned, if something is going on.
Yeah.
So, and many times it started very small, and people take it for like, okay, he's going to change. Mm-hmm. And the person always going to say, well, I'm going to change. Mm-hmm. And then it goes for a while, it's okay. Yeah. And then after a while, it course again. And it happens again. And then it's something that sometimes people, they broaden their way, the space that they have, they're breaking their own rules of accepting things.
Who's breaking the rules, the perpetrator or the victim?
Both of them. Because the one who's been the victim always is going to think, well, he's going to change. So what happens, the abuser will say, okay, just pardon me, forgive me, and then it becomes something, and then it happens again. So what happens? The person that said, listen, I'm going to change, never changed. So the victim is going to receive it again. And that's where I think that when people start talking about these things, you have to come in as a pastor, as somebody that's taking care of people. You have to understand that this thing is a system. You know, it's an ongoing thing. That's where I think you have to show the person that, listen, this thing is a cycle.
But the pastor may never know what's going on in house.
Okay, but that's where you see the signs.
Uh-huh.
You see the signs that these people, they will have, the relationship will go up and down.
Mm.
You know, and then they will talk, you know, or people get quiet, or people get mad, or people change in their actions.
Mm-hmm.
People are very, very, very quickly irritated. You know, you see, also spiritually, they will have, you could say, drawback.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they will even. I saw people coming less to church.
Yeah.
You see people doing less things.
Mm-hmm.
So they're kind of limited.
So the abuse makes them change their behavior, and all that.
So all that is recognizable.
Okay, so the pastor then has to be very observant, know his people or her people, and observe what's going on in their life. That's what you're saying.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
That's different. Okay. Can you weigh in on this? Because I don't know whether you have seen something like we're trying to talk about. Maybe you can use that to illustrate or to kind of make the picture clearer.
Okay. Yeah. I would actually, what I was about to come in, to say that the best thing probably would be to help the victim himself identify. Because like he said earlier on, there are times it becomes so normal to the victim that they even don't realize that they are going through abuse.
Okay.
So I think the best thing is to empower people to identify when they are going through an abusive situation. And I think one of the key things we can identify, or someone can use to identify, is that, look, when you are in the presence of an abuser, you're just not yourself. You are always afraid to express yourself public. So for you, when you realize that you have someone, maybe a partner or a friend, anytime you are with that person or you come in public or even in private, you have an opinion, but you are so much afraid to express it, there is something wrong. So that is one of the signs you should be able to see that, look, maybe this relationship I have with this person is abusive because I do not have the freedom to express my opinion in the presence of that person. Probably when you are with other people or even with that person's friends, you are able to just speak up and freely. So one key thing when you are with somebody, either a friend or a partner, and you realize that you are never able to freely express yourself in the presence of that person, it is a sign that the relationship might be abusive. There are other signs as well.
That's great. You know, people like this, I have a name for them. I call them thorn lovers. Why? Because, you know, there were certain, some seed which fell among the thorns and they stayed there and they developed. So they flourish among the thorns. There are people who are in an abusive relationship, but for some reason, maybe for reasons of insecurity, they feel they have no other choice. Nobody will accept them. Another person may not take them.
Or they are spent already.
Oh yes, they have already spent whatever they have. So they as well stay there.
Yeah.
What word do we have for people like this? Because this thing is to help people with this kind of issues. You see, I think we need to invest some you know attention on this aspect.
Okay.
Because some of them may feel so helpless that they say, well, after I'm already inside, what can I do? Let me just stay. And then, like you said, before I realize somebody was...
Okay,
was
I'm of the opinion that the first thing or the first person who should be able to identify that he's hurt is the victim himself or herself. The victim should be the first person to identify that he's been abused or she's been abused. Because when the relationship started, there was love, there was joy, there was this and that and that.
Yeah.
So when you see that these things are changing, you should be the first person to know that something is not working right. And if you mean or if you want to keep your relationship, then I'm still of the opinion that you should be the first person to seek help. It's not like telling everybody that this is going on in my marriage, but we have pastors, we have counselors.
How should that person approach it? Because I can imagine somebody, you know, they are private people. But yeah, there's an abuse going on. They are wondering, how do they take a step to let the pastor know what's going on? And how would they, you know, overcome that barrier of maybe shyness or privacy, so to speak? They also don't want to give a bad image to the man, for example, or they're hoping, okay, if they, what if they do then, you know, things go better. But what should they...
The man of God step? Or our pastors are spiritual fathers. If really your pastor is somebody you do respect or you trust well, you must have the confidence
to go ahead and tell
confide. Not telling everything about your marriage, but try to spill just a little bit. Of late, my partner is doing this and that. Could you please
come
in and talk to him? That would be the first step. That would be the first step. When that help comes, the relationship can be mended. Because maybe you think you have invested so much, you don't want to lose your partner. But then if you don't take the step, it will go out of hand. But if you take the step and seek a trusted help, the relationship that you cherish can can be mended.
Do you agree?
Yes, I would. I would also come in to say that apart from pastors, I mentioned earlier on, there are also professional counselors. If you, let's say you are not a Christian, there are professional counselors you could consult. And I would personally recommend everyone who is a Christian to see a Christian counselor, preferably your pastor. But if you are not a Christian, because we are addressing this to people who are not Christians as well, and you find yourself in this kind of relationship and you are wondering, what do I do? What is the next step? I think there are helplines or institutions of professional counseling. You can make an appointment and talk to a counselor about your situation, and then they can give you the necessary advice.
That's awesome. Very powerful. Well, you have heard it. That's the pastoral forum. I don't know what problem you have, but we have also heard that the migrants, more especially the Nigerians, do not like to bring their cases out, and some are going through lots and lots of difficulties. So the city council is looking for a way to reach out to them. So if you're out there, you're a migrant or you're a Nigerian, I want you to know that I volunteered myself to be in city council from every Monday from 1 o'clock to 3 o'clock. I would be there to hear your problems and to see how we can bring them across to the authorities. Every manner of issue you think you can talk about. I'm your own sister, I'm your own person. Please meet me at the city council. I will be at upstairs. So you have my number is 0684-606-550. I repeat, I will be at the city council. Anton the complaint, number 150, the city Starsdale Cantor, upstairs. Every Monday from 1 to 3 p.m. If you're a migrant, you have issue, have some difficulties, there are things you think you want to talk to somebody to bring across to you, to the authorities, please meet me at that place. And then let's see how we can solve some of the issues. Issues that can help our community. Please meet me there and let's talk about them. God bless you. My name is Apostle Helen Rodokeno. My number is 0684-606-550. Come out and share your burden and let us see how we can find a solution to them.
I imagine me being free. Be honest with you. It was hard.
Being in love with someone like me. Finally, I can
imagine me. The song is dedicated to people like me.
So in this time, we are preparing and we are leaving off, and then we are about to go to our social awareness solution. That's the next thing that is coming up now. Well, so stay tuned.
Never felt pretty enough.
Radio Voice of Niger.
But imagine God whispering in your ear, letting you know that everything that has happened.
You may give us a call. It's all gone. 6 months. I'm in the studio. My name is Apostle Ibrahim. I'm a lady Aguaboma of Radio Voice of Niger. Your popular radio awarding program.
My faith.
Brings us to the end of our pastoral forum, so we are preparing now to move into our wealth creation, because that's why we've not heard for a long time now. So stay tuned.
Thank you.
Come on, join Diana Hamilton. That's her, that's her. Yes, yes, yes.
Today's topic is migrants, wealth creation.
Yes.
Wealth creation by migrants in the diaspora. And as you know, money controls the world, money rules the world. We can't deny that. And it is the lifeblood of our world economy. And some people think that it is a class thing, and others have the opinion that it comes by dint of hard work. Do migrants who have left their home countries stand a better chance at succeeding in creating wealth than their home-based counterparts? If so, what must and can they do to succeed? For our guest this morning, we have Chief
Kirian Abodike, a graduate student of procurement management from the Nairobi Business University. Say hello, Chief Kirian.
Good morning, everyone.
We also have Mr. Joachim Ohai, Managing Director and CEO of Ohai and Ohai Oil and Gas Limited. Sounds very influential, very dynamic and surprising young man. Welcome, Joachim.
Thank you. Good morning, listener. It's my pleasure to be here.
Yes. So, and we're expecting one more panelist to join us. Hopefully, he'll make it in time. The traffic is heavy this morning because of the weather. All right. So, I would like to start by asking the question, what would you consider to be a reasonable definition of wealth? What would you say wealth is? Can we do that in just a minute or less?
Wealth can be defined literally as an abundance of material possession, of tangible and intangible goods and services.
I like that.
But in economic terms, I like to define it in economic terms. I choose to define wealth as the total stocks.
As a what?
Total stocks or assets of an individual, which creates value for the owner. The value here represents the market price of the stock or asset, which in turn is a function of the person's investment, financing, or and profit decision.
That, I believe, sounds too complicated for our listeners.
That's
the economic definition.
When we're talking about wealth, I shouldn't discuss it literally as just
a layman.
It should be in economic terms. What is the value creation of that wealth? To understand what it is.
Well, yeah, our listeners are laymen, so they're not economists.
It's okay.
Thank
it's
you
okay.
very much.
It's okay. It's an abundance of abundant possession of material.
Thank you very much. All right, Joachim, you want to add to what you said or give another?
Yes, mine is definition? Similar to ease. And thank you, Chief, for that explicit definition. Mine is clear, which says where is the abundance of valuable resources or material possession. He said the word wealth is derived from the old English word well, which is from an Indo-European word stem. An individual, community, region, or country that possesses an abundance of such possession or resources is known as wealthy.
What's the word again? The original word is what?
From the English word is called well, which is
how do you spell
that? That is, you take off the last TH.
Last TH. Yeah. Oh, well. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Really?
And that was gotten from the Indo-European word, which is stem.
I see.
Yes.
Super. Wow. Awesome. I never knew that. Okay. So would you say, by the way, listeners, we want you to be a part of the discussion. Give us a call on 027371619. If you have an input to make, a remark or a question to our panelists this morning. You and me, we are migrants. We are outside of our home countries, and people have expectations upon us, and they think we have traveled, so we're going to create wealth. We're going to bring money home. We're going to do great things. And yeah, we are confronted with all kinds of challenges. Now, we want to assess our chances at making this wealth, because by definition, we're supposed to be better off than where we're coming from. So we want to really assess these things and see how we stand a chance of creating this wealth, which is expected of us. This is what the discussion today is all about. Now, do you believe, gentlemen, that that wealth is a class thing, or it is something everyone can do or can create? And let me throw this to Joachim.
Yes.
So hi.
Yes. I think your question is in order, and it is clear for us to understand it that wealth is not a class thing.
It's not a class thing.
It's not a class.
So wealth doesn't belong to a particular class of people. You cannot say, oh, these people I was in India some years back, and we found out there are classes. You know, they have this caste system, yeah. And some people are born poor and they remain poor. Some people are born rich and they remain rich. So you are saying wealth is not a class thing.
It's not a class thing, but seemingly it seems to be a class thing.
Uh-huh.
And like you said, does it come by dint of hard work?
Mm-hmm.
Of course it does. It does play a role.
Is it one of the main determinants of worldliness?
Yes, it is the main determinant of worldliness.
Okay.
Irrespective of your race, your creed, if you can do hard work, mm-hmm. you can work hard, and you do smart work, there is no way the laws of wealth will not favor you.
Mm-hmm.
And it is clear to say that when we say wealth, most times what we think is that when you are filled with material resources, that's mm-hmm. when you are wealthy. Mm-hmm. But actually, in the recent...
Let me find out who's calling now. Hello, good morning.
Hello, good morning.
Yes.
That's Grace here.
Oh, God bless you, my dear.
Hi. I want to contribute a little or just draw attention to this. If we say wealth, I think we also shouldn't think of only the possession, but investing in ourselves and our kids.
Yes.
But not only the material thing. Sometimes mm-hmm. wealth can be knowledge.
Yes.
And this is what we normally ignore. And then go for the material things only.
Yeah.
But I think we also need to consider wealth as improving on yourself
mm-hmm.
and having knowledge.
Right.
Thank you.
Very good one. Thank you very much, my dear. Bless you. Okay.
Yes, what in continuation, I just want to say thank you, Bridget.
Mm-hmm.
She clearly hit the point. Grace,
yeah,
she hit the point I was about to make. In the words of David Theora, he said something. He said, wealth is the ability to fully experience life.
Uh-huh.
When you are wealthy, when you are healthy, can say you are wealthy.
You're wealthy.
So it does not connote only
material possessions.
So when you are wise and you are living life to the fullest in your calling, in mm-hmm. your field,
mm-hmm.
we can consider you wise. We can consider you wealthy.
Yeah.
So let's not put it to mean that it's only your material possession.
Abundance of material.
That is what makes you wealthy.
Yes. Yeah. One of you mentioned earlier on when you were defining, it's the abundance of material and immaterial possessions.
Yeah, tangible and intangible.
Yeah. I think that's the more all encompassing definition. So which includes what Sister Grace just said.
The knowledge. The uh-huh. knowledge assets.
Yeah, but we cannot deny the fact that when you have the material, you have the wherewithal to be able to deal with issues in this material world. You can pay your bills. You can run your life. You can be a help to other people. Do we have to downplay the fact that having the material resources, is important? I mean, do we say it's not as crucial as having both material and immaterial?
Having material possession is also very important.
Uh-huh.
But there's one thing about having material possession. It's not only having something with you, because uh-huh. there should be a way to sustain that material thing.
Yeah.
That is creating value, adding value.
Mm-hmm.
By doing things that we bring in, generate another fund. Because if you have today mm-hmm. and you don't sustain it, you will lose everything.
Yes.
So it's not about having. I can give you an example of those who inherited a lot of property from their parents.
Yes.
And because they did not suffer for it,
yes.
they will just eat the money. Within a year, two, they
lost wrong. Everything.
They lose everything. Yes. Will you call that person a wealthy man? It's no more wealthy.
No.
So the wealth is the lady said
uh-huh.
is about the knowledge.
Uh-huh.
The knowledge asset is very important.
Yes.
Because if you don't have that knowledge, you cannot even sustain what you have. And the sustenance is very important. It's creating value, making things to happen. Yeah. So
I like that. You've made a very, very good point. Joachim, you want to add something to what he just said?
What he just said is right on the point.
Right on. Mm-hmm.
It's not about wealth creation. We talk. Mm-hmm. You say what your question to him was?
Mm-hmm.
Do we downplay the part of having this material possession?
Mm-hmm.
Of course not.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we don't.
Material possessions mm-hmm. are the fruits
mm-hmm.
of the tree, which is the knowledge, basic know-how on how to create it.
Yeah.
So what is more important is that basic knowledge, the ability to know how to create this world.
Yes.
And the focus must not just be alone on a material possession, though we know it's very important in the world we live in. It's what makes the world go round.
Yeah.
But also,
yes,
in other areas, health-wise, family-wise, more, you should be healthy all round.
So people who have the wealth, or who can create it, have a knowledge on how to do it, and also how to maintain it. That's what you're saying,
yes,
which is very important.
Yes. Yes.
Before we, let's take this call, and then we'll get on to the next question. Hello, good morning.
Hello, good morning, Original.
Original, go ahead, sir.
I'm enjoying the program.
Mm-hmm.
The way they define wealth, so do we say somebody who is blessed is also wealthy? I want to know the relation between a blessed person and a wealthy person.
Okay. What's the difference between a blessed person and a wealthy person? Thank you, sir.
If I have to go first, I think what we must understand, we said wealth is a compound thing. Being blessed is a component of being wealthy.
Yeah, it's
being healthy is a component of being wealthy. It's part of it.
Uh-huh.
So they are part of and parcel of the same thing. So what we want to emphasize here is that it's important for you to be wealthy all around.
All around.
You are blessed, you are healthy, you have a good family, you are successful in your field, generally happy. Like I quoted David Theora before, he said, wealth is the ability to fully experience life.
So in that, how do we distinguish clearly? A blessed person, being blessed is having other things in addition to blessing. That was having wealth and other things.
Yes, I try to say that being blessed is a component, is part of being wealthy.
All right.
So that's my question.
We'll take that for now. Now, my next question is academic education a necessary prerequisite for personal wealth creation, or is it simply a ploy to turn other people into wealth creating machines? Because I know for a fact, you know, I did my MBA some years back. You realize that the focus of the training was to create managers, to manage businesses, companies. Of course, some people had the liberty to start their own companies, but you were given tools and skills. But basically, people were focused, sometimes geared towards, you know, some of these, large companies, some of these multinational companies. You get the point. So my question is, education in general, is it a necessary prerequisite to being able to create wealth? Or it is just a design to turn people, other people, into wealth creating machines? They create wealth for other people, because there are people who are not educated, who don't have whatever it takes, but they control a lot of wealth. So can you please help me understand this thing, this paradox here?
Yes, I would say that education is very necessary.
Uh-huh.
Education is very necessary because with education, what we are talking now is that you have to generate more wealth. Like I said before, you have to sustain that wealth.
Uh-huh.
And if you don't have knowledge of how to diversify and go into different fields to sustain that what you have,
yes,
we lose them.
Uh-huh.
So, and what you said about maybe somebody who is not educated,
uh-huh,
owning property and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
Yes, you use those who have the knowledge,
mm-hmm,
as managers, who can now run mm-hmm business for another person.
Yeah.
It's a shareholder.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah? The original owner is a shareholder of that company.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, in multinationals, you don't see the original owners in the business.
No.
They employ managers to manage the property for them.
Right.
So the managers have to diversify, go into new things, new businesses that can create wealth.
Mm-hmm.
They have to see the future. They have to know what is going on. So where the education is very important is that those people they employ, mm-hmm, must be educated. Because if they are not, they may not be able to sustain it.
Mm.
So education is very important if you want to sustain that business empire. Yeah, so that is the area I'm going.
Yeah, okay, Joaquin.
Let me come in shortly.
Give us your take on that.
In addition to what Chief has just said. From the perspective we are addressing this issue from, it's clear that you are trying to find out what the role of
education
in, with respect to your experience as an MBA student.
Well, not my experience, but
generally. I want to make this point clear. We are aware that our educational system, worldwide as it is, when it comes to wealth creation, success has its shortcomings.
Yeah, shortcomings.
So most times, we are educated work for others instead of starting up on your own.
Because we don't train people to become entrepreneurs. We train them to work for other people.
Work for other people.
Good. You've caught the point I want to make.
So that is clear. Yeah. And also, in addition to that, it's also clear for us to understand that you can be wealthy even with your common sense or what we call the sixth sense. You can get wealthy. But the educational aspect to it is that it gives that extra edge.
You're refining.
Because the world, the world we are in today is a world that is dynamic in change. Change is just the only constant thing. So when you are educated, it gives you that extra edge to, you know, chart new courses and new frontiers. So give or take, you might say, I don't want to get educated, but my advice is you can take courses to do what you are doing in a better way and supercharge your means of creating wealth. Yes.
So education is good, helpful.
It's important.
In creating and maintaining wealth.
It is important.
Okay. But do you think some types of education only create or turn people into, let's say, perpetual money-making machines?
Of course, it does. For instance, if you went to a school to read, for example, with due respect, theology, for instance, nobody's expecting you to do as well as somebody that went to a business school to go and earn an MBA and want to supercharge the business. So there are some education. My answer to the question is that there are some level of education you have to get involved with that will enhance your ability to create wealth.
Wow. Yeah. All right. Now, my next question. Are migrants in the diaspora better positioned to create wealth than their home-based counterparts? Can we conclude, or do we have any reason to believe that those who are outside of their home countries, maybe they are coming from a third world country to a the first world country or developed country, do we say that those who have made that transition are better positioned to create wealth than those who are back home? Chief, I see you shaking your head. So
No.
Hey, why?
My answer is no.
Why no?
Yeah, it depends on what you are doing. Most people, let me tell you, some people even made mistakes traveling outside the borders of their country.
Really?
Yeah, because like in Nigeria, there's abundant resources that you can use to generate.
But why do we have a lot of poverty too?
Yeah, that is what we are discussing here. Sometimes the education, maybe some people do not know exactly what to go into.
Yeah.
Because first you have to define what you want.
Mm-hmm.
When you understand what you want, then you see how you can move to it.
But you know what? Let me interject here. Gentlemen, I want you to pay attention. We in Africa have a lot of.
Wow, that's our. Well, that is. The end of the pastoral, the wealth creation, which we were talking about. And in case you want to listen to that, please just go to radiovoiceofnaija.org and then click on the business segment, and then you can now see our topics. Okay? So that's it. So because we want to play the other social work. So people want to enjoy the music. You wrote me off a girl. Be down so you say I'm a man. to our social segment now.
Aka, who is also an NGO entrepreneur and a politician.
This is a social segment, and we are talking about promoting community participation and self-reliance among the reasons.
We are coming with hardcore this time, so wait for us.
You did not campaign very well for your people.
We are coming. We already have the package already prepared. We don't want to expose
so
it now.
So you have do to it. Tell the you migrants what yes. you are going to do. Then we will be able to, you know,
yes.
push buttons and get you there.
Yes.
But it's a very good attempt.
It's coming.
We have our nurse here, Ms. Faustina Ikeadi, who is a nurse and an entrepreneur too. Honey, welcome.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Are you happy to be here?
Yes, I am.
So I'm so much in love with the clothes you are wearing. And we have Elder Uyi, who happened to be the Vice President of Nigerian Nationals in the Netherlands. And also, you have, he's an entrepreneur as well. So Elder, and also a community leader, by the way. Welcome to Majesty TV.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me once again.
Yes, we are always happy when you are here with us. Because that title, Elder, is not a small one. So we believe that you have something to deliver here. Mm-hmm. Yeah, don't you?
Well, of course.
Uh-huh. So that's it for now. And once again, please, those of you who are watching us live through our Facebook, remember, you can make your comments and you can send them across, or we can read them to you as well. Read them and then you can answer the question by yourself. So, welcome to this evening broadcast.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Now, to what extent can we, as residents, relate to the subject matter of this program? The subject matter is promoting community participation and self-reliance among the migrant community in Amsterdam. So this subject matter, to what extent can you relate to it?
Personally?
Yes.
Okay. Regarding this subject, my connection is I go out a lot into the community, into the government places, to the social gatherings and meetings and conferences. Mm-hmm. And those conferences that I go, most of them are for Ghanaian conferences or meetings or workshops, and some of them also are for the Dutch government and also the Dutch business conferences and other things.
Okay.
So therefore, I see myself really participating in this community. Mm. Although I'm doing it for myself, but it's also having impact on others.
Oh, okay. So you are saying that you participate effectively?
Yes.
That's what you are saying?
Yes.
Are you self-reliant?
Oh, yes.
Okay. That's good. Let me go to Ms. Faustina. Can you say something, honey?
Yes. What I have to say, you can participate. There are many ways you can participate in this community. In empowering yourself to become one of them or to associate one of them.
Yeah, no, but we want to know about you.
Okay,
so,
but for myself,
yes.
What I do, for example, I have an organization that I work with.
Okay.
And we do have an event once in a year.
Okay.
And that event takes us around to see things in the communities.
Wow, that's good.
And not just only within Amsterdam, I would just say within Holland here, that we went out and said things. And the more, because the more you say things, the more you educate yourself. So, and another thing also do in my working place is also a place that I use to empower myself, because then I am mingling with the indigenous people here, and then we are interacting.
Yeah.
So that's the two ways I am.
Yes, you are involved.
For myself, I'm involved.
You are
into
participation.
I'm into participation.
Okay, that's very good.
Mm-hmm.
That's very good. Oh, let's hear from Elder Uye.
Yes, you see, as it concerns this subject matter of today's program, it is a very important topic.
Yeah.
And because this is an issue that revolves around us.
Yeah.
particularly us who are migrants, who are immigrants in the Netherlands. And as a community leader, as a leader of the Nigerian community here, I've been in a position to understand and to see in its real sense the challenges facing our people, facing mm-hmm. immigrants, particularly in the Nigerian community.
Okay.
I know that many of Nigerians in Amsterdam are not self-reliant.
Okay.
Both men and women, and there are obvious factors for that, you know, that we have been able to see, because we relate with our people from time to time, both privately and on the social scenarios, and also during our activities as community leaders.
Mm-hmm.
So we know that many Nigerians here in the Netherlands, and particularly or specifically in Amsterdam, are not self-reliant, and it's a very big problem. And it's a big problem because it affects us at large as a community of Nigerians in Amsterdam. It affects us. It affects families. It affects marriages. It affects relationships. You know. And so, I think that it is an issue that we really need to look into, get ourselves involved, to find a way out of this. Of this situation with a view to helping our people become more self-reliant and more productive.
Okay, okay. Yeah. But you, yourself,
yes,
are you involved in the community? Yeah, you are involved because you are a Nigerian community leader, is that?
Yes, I'm involved. Okay. Well,
but then how involved are you to the community, to the indigenous?
Yes, you mean indigenous, you mean among Nigerians?
No, not among Nigerians, among the Dutch itself.
Well,
in the society where, because sometimes you see that people are like Nigerians, we just cluster among mm-hmm. ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
So we are not participating.
Yes.
We are only among ourselves. But the municipality is looking for a way to break so that
barrier.
People can mix up, because it's when you mix up with the society you are in, not with your own people alone. When you mix up with the culture of the people, then you will be able to learn, and then that is when integration comes in. When people are only mixing only to themselves, they end up learning nothing.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, we try to mix up, and being community leaders here, we also have that opportunity. We have, it's obvious that we have more opportunities to mix up with other immigrants, you know, in this society here, and see, you know, how much we can be useful. We can be more useful
mm-hmm.
to them mm-hmm. with a view to giving. You see, integration. When you're talking about a self-reliance has to do with productivity.
Of course, all right. Me, yeah.
Okay, and productivity is a wide thing. It's a wide thing.
Yeah.
When you talk about productivity in socially, economically, or self-reliance financially, self-reliance revolves around so many things, you know, as it concerns us. However, if we want to be more specific here, I think the most important self-reliance, I think, our people need mm-hmm. here in Amsterdam
mm-hmm.
is economic self-reliance.
Of course, that's what
okay.
I think.
All right.
We talk about that.
Yes,
I understand self-reliance more on that aspect, to be economically independent.
Yes.
You know, that means you can do something for yourself, provide something, and then sustain yourself
yes.
without depending on anyone.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Yes.
So that means you are now doing something that is yielding profit and yielding money to the point that you don't depend on the government.
Yes.
And that's the where every society want to be. Because when you have so many people who are depending just on the government, give me this, then there will be no innovation. You see? The guy who developed Facebook, look, the amount of millions they are making now, because he invented it. Uh-huh. So the society will want to promote or to challenge many of her citizens to come to that level where you become you can participate and become
self-reliant,
and it is good for every society.
Yeah. Can I say? I think
yes. You can add something. Yeah.
Yeah. What he was trying to say, and what we are talking about is how to be imparted with the community we are in, not about being Nigerian, and then group yourself.
Because
when you group yourself, you will still remain in that your Nigerian community
culture. Yeah.
But you are not in Nigeria.
You are
now in Europe.
Yeah.
How then do you become a participant in things going on in where you are?
Exactly.
Because
that's it.
When you bring in Nigerian things, you're not in Nigeria. This is not our country. We have to be honest.
Yeah.
It's good that we meet ourselves to interrupt. It's very beautiful, and it gives good feeling because then you can be able to meet. You feel homely because you are not home. But how do you make an impact in the society you are in?
Exactly.
And that's what he's saying. And personally, he's asking for yourself, how do you make an impact before we start addressing to the committee, to the viewers?
For example, I decided to go into politics.
Exactly.
So that the community, my community, will know that she's there, so then I can also be there.
Like I decided to go into media, you know.
You see? Yeah, so then my community, the Ghanaian, will know that if my sister is there, I can also be there.
Exactly.
So this is the impact, because maybe through me, other ones will also look at me and say, hey, I saw this lady, she looks like a Ghanaian. If she has done it, I can also do it. So then why don't I go there?
Exactly.
So this is some of the impartation of how we want to get our people in.
And
for me, I decided to, because I involved myself into organization, and the organization, what we do, we bring in people from Africa to expose them to what is going on here.
Okay.
And then we are making, and I'm communicating with the real Dutch people with what they are doing, and they are telling us, and we become like an mediator between them and the Nigerian people, and they are learning because we've done it now for 4 years now.
Okay.
And they are coming. It's like every year this year was mind-blowing.
Yeah.
And now we are doing it, and next year, and even the so-called indigenous Dutch people, they are willing to go down to Nigeria in order to educate them.
Mm.
So, and at the same time, I'm not doing it Nigeria. Nigeria and the indigenous people here. And at the same time, I work, and where I work, I have the indigenous people, and I interact with them.
Yeah.
And I talk with them, because if we don't get to know, we don't know when the laws are being changed.
Mm.
We don't know when things are being plus or minus in the law. And then we are the one
to get jobs without